Greetings, salutations, and welcome back to the Plague Stalkers podcast. I'm your host, Will Benson, joined as always by my faithful sidekick companion and awesome dude, Aramis Perez. Aramis, how are you tonight, sir?
Who are you again? Who am I? What are we doing?
I am Will. I am the Will, the way, the awesome, the amazing Will.
Well,
the,
then... Why are we talking on the internet? I forget.
We're doing a podcast. This is a thing we do every week, usually.
Oh, the podcast. I forgot about that.
Yep, so let's just get right,
Untap a keep and draw.
Yeah, that brings us right into our beginning. Okay, so...
Oops.
Well, first things first, must be maintained. Tonight is the Sam 76... in honor of July 4th. So, hallelujah. God bless America.
America.
Plus, it's so much better than the porch. Don't ever drink the porch thing, guys. The porch is awful. But this is tasty.
I am actually looking around. I am minus drink today.
Oh, that sucks.
I'm going to be awfully parched by the end of the episode.
Yes, you will, and I will not. So, I got to get my liver in shape. I'm going back for a college reunion this weekend. Oh, this is going to end horribly. And then next weekend is my pseudo-bachelor party. So, yeah, my liver, I got to get her back into shape. She hasn't been in fighting shape for some time. Mm. So, but what have we got tonight? Well, we're going to obviously talk about where we were last week because, we weren't here.
Surprise.
We're going to talk a little bit about M20 spoilers and reactions. I mean, what a week for us to miss, man.
Well, it was like the last time we missed a week, and then we're like, everything happened the week we were gone.
It was just ridiculous. We have combat tonight. We're going to discuss biggest impact, we think, from Core 20 on the metagame and on standard overall. And then we're going to try to get into main 2, do a little MC3 talk. I mean, our dead horse has risen again. But with that, let's get right down to it. Where were we last week? And this is actually going to bring us to a little bit of housekeeping here, because last week and the week before where we missed, or 2 weeks ago, has made us realize something that, we're middle-aged men, it's summertime, and we have kids. So the fact is that last week what happened was I got stuck with a whole lot of... house stuff going on. Like, pretty much I couldn't record because I had guys sawing into holes, and we're getting plumbing done and he's still not done, and every time
you saw what I put on our Facebook page,
it
was so right, every, though, right?
Every time he saws a wall, I see dollar signs. So every time he fixes a pipe, another one breaks down the line.
Destroy target wall.
Oh, it's awful. So that was where we were last week. We just couldn't record. And he was here like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. I mean, so there was no chance to record. But it brings up a point in that I'm getting married in 25 days.
But who's counting?
So, yeah, believe me.
Tick, 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 tick.
I know who's counting. So, I mean, with that, I mean, and we're trying to get the house together, and there's so much going on, is that, guys, I mean, we're trying to do this podcast. It's very important to us. You guys are very important to us, and we love the show, and we're so glad you guys are in and watching. However, a lot of podcasts take entire summers off, and we're not going to do that. But, I mean, we're going to reserve the right to kind of take a week off if we need to take a week off to take care of stuff with our families, at the very least until July 20th. So, and once the wedding is over with, and by wedding, I mean the week after, I'm obviously on my honeymoon. So, but once the wedding's over with and things calm down, I'm sure we'll be back to a normal schedule. But right now, just kind of, we ask that you roll with us. And I mean, we really do love our fans and the people that are supporting us. It's just, there's not much we can do. At the end of the day, I cannot tell my fiance that we can't go tear down a wall because I have to record a podcast about a cardboard, card game.
Well, you theoretically could. It just means that you would be doing the demo work because she would be putting you through the wall.
Exactly. Or worse, be like, well, we don't need to take the wall apart because, hey, you know what? I'm out of here, prick. Then I could do the podcast, though. No, I do. I want to marry my girl. No, I'm going to stick with this.
So you had to think about that one.
Yeah, I did for just a half. Well, we talked earlier today about my wedding present, and I still say, if you want to give us at our wedding a box of Core 2020, you do that, man. Wendy says we, no. She'd rather have Dungeons and Dragons stuff, but I would be okay with cards.
I already know what we're gonna give you, and
okay,
I think you'll appreciate it.
Okay, is it a core 2020 box? Because I don't know that I'm even gonna get to pre-release. This is, guys. Yeah, realize this. Okay, if we're not doing the podcast, realize this. I may not even get to pre-release. Okay, this is how serious this is. So I'm just
spoiler alert. It's not a box, but. It's something you could definitely. I think it's something you'll be able to use, but you'll. I can't give too much away because there's something special.
Don't
about
ruin
it,
my so. Wedding. So
yeah. Well, I'll keep the goats away then.
So then the TLDR on this is strictly that, you know what, guys, we're going to reserve the right to kind of just, and we'll always update the Facebook page because we still like to record Monday nights at 8-ish. Well, 6:30-ish now that we're in summer, but we still like to record Monday nights. So please, you know, plan on that, and we'll always update our Facebook page if we're not recording. So with that being said, we should just get right into, you know, the whole thing, because, wow, do we have a lot to talk about.
Main phase.
Okay, so main phase tonight is the same thing that every other podcast you've ever listened to this week and last week has been talking about. Hmm. No, not Modern Horizons, because we don't do that.
But, no.
Although I did get some, by the way. Did you get any?
Nope.
Oh, I snow-covered land.
Ooh.
It's back. I like, it's pretty.
I thought about it, but nah.
Yeah, I bought some to say I did, and I was kind of like, I'm never going to use any of these in my modern, so what am I doing? But in any event, yeah. But the other thing that everybody's talking about is, you know, Core 2020. And oh my god, what a set.
I'm not even sure this is a core set.
that's just it. I mean, part of combat, I mean, we can talk about it now, but I mean, I'm looking at this, and core sets are supposed to be these things that are for, like, the new player. I'm sorry, some of these mechanics, they're not new player friendly at all. It's like, I just, you know, you look at some of them, I mean, yeah, the ley lines are kind of... Even the ley lines, I mean, you got to kind of know what you're doing with them, especially with the London Mulligan.
Well, I mean, there's just to, you know, to sort of just get the ball rolling.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, some of these cards are, I guess the running joke, especially on Reddit, is that Core 2020, the code name for the set was, what can't we fit in Modern Horizons? Let's make a set about those cards. Because some of the cards here, like Embodiment of Agonies, it's a 0/0 demon, rare. For 1/2 black, has flying and death touch, which is already great. Embodiment of Agonies enters the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter on it for each different mana cost among non-land cards in your graveyard. For example, 2 and a black and 1 and 2 black are different mana costs.
Right.
Now, what this does for players is it teaches you that there's a difference between converted mana cost and mana cost. And normally in a core set, they're just like, eh. It's a card. It does a thing. And then it's pretty straightforward. This one's like, guess what? You have to keep track of this stuff now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Well, the fact that they're bringing back the ley lines. I mean, we could even bring that up. I mean, it's, first of all, how nice is it that we get to talk about ley lines on our standard podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Woohoo! Okay, because you know, like, my first modern decks after I came back, what was my first modern deck?
Boggles.
Boggles. Well, and
Boggles.
A big part of Boggles was Leyline of Sanctity.
And
so, yeah, like, to have Leyline of Sanctity come back, I'm kind of like, yay! I mean, I'm sorry, I love it. Planar Cleansing, the fact that they reprinted that?
I will say this, though. What? I bet you were kind of sad in the one respect that they reprinted it, because you already, you know, forked over a bunch of money to get your copies.
Yeah, $75, I have three.
I know.
I'll get the fourth. And, well, I mean, it... You know what? I almost want to call this the hate set, because it's basically like, hey, what's everybody playing in standard meta right now? Okay, let's develop cards that basically screw them all up.
Well, here's the thing that shocked me the most when I first saw it.
They brought
protection back.
Yeah.
They brought back protection. I'm like, holy crap. I didn't think they did it anymore.
Dude, so, nobody thought they'd ever... I think you and I had this discussion last year. I said, wouldn't it be something if, like, in a core set, they reprinted ley lines? And you're like, they'll never reprint ley lines. I'm like, okay. You're probably right.
Like, you know, given... what was it? Shifting Ceratops.
Yeah.
Can't be countered. Protection from blue. I mean, that's like Tempest stuff.
Yeah.
You don't see things with protection anymore. And I guess...
Pratt's all the way through this. Pratt is all the way through this.
Yeah. Mark Rosewater was saying that they're bringing back protection as an evergreen ability on like a probationary status. They want to see how it does. But I'm like, this is fine. As long as there's not a million cards of protection, I'm fine. This is good. Because, you know, sometimes they're going to be strictly sideboard cards, especially the color hosing cards. They brought back color hosing.
I know. Well, freaking Devout Decree.
Freaking
Exile
Fry.
Target creature planeswalker that's black or red.
Fry. Destroy Fry target Teferi.
Yeah. Basically, that's what it should say. It's destroy target Teferi. I mean, the Chandra thing, everybody's kind of talking about that at first. It's like, actually, it's weird. They were talking about that. That was like, but now it's like old news. At first, mm-hmm. they're like, really? Are they doing the whole three planeswalkers and uncommons? They're like, no. We're not doing the uncommons and rares. Just in this part, Chandra's doing that. Everybody else is back to Mythic, which is news, you know, and that's a good thing in some regards. But I mean,
still seven planeswalkers in a set.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but you look at this, and I look at Mu Yanling, mm-hmm. and I look at her, and I think to myself, and I heard this on the MTBG Goldfish earlier, too, and I couldn't agree more. They're like, Mu Yanling, okay, you're going to have Mu Yanling or Narset. You choose Narset, which means you're choosing for the three-drop slot. Mm. So you're choosing the uncommon planeswalker over the damn Mythic. Mm-hmm. I will say
this about Mu Yanling, and for those of you who haven't seen the spoiler, first
she's
of all,
great. Oh, yeah, I should yeah. read her. She's one colorless, two blue. Mm-hmm. Until your next turn, her plus two ability is until your next turn, up to one target creature gets -2/0 and loses flying, which is good. -3, create a 4/4 blue elemental bird creature token with flying.
Which is pretty good. I mean, you have to wait a turn to do it, but that's not bad.
Yep. And then -8, you get an emblem with islands you control have tap, draw a card.
Which is fantastic.
Which is incredible. But again, Narset is as cant on a stick.
Yeah, yeah. And she shuts off multiple card draws for your opponent.
Yeah, it's like...
No, yeah, absolutely. Like, in a vacuum, if you're looking at Mu Yanling by herself, she's good. She's not great because she dies to shock.
Yes. I totally can't agree. Could not agree with you more.
But, I mean, if you get one activation out of her, she's probably going to give you a 4/4 flyer for essentially three mana, which is great. If you manage to ultimate her, she's, you know, that's one of those kind of I win the game ultimates. But, yeah, compared to Narset, Narset's just nuts.
Narset's amazing. Well, I think the kicker of Narset is that, like all the planeswalkers of War of the Spark, the static ability is really part of that. Mm-hmm. And these, I mean, it does bear noting that these planeswalkers, with the exception of the Mythic Chandra, the only static ability she has is this spell can't be countered. There's no static abilities on these.
Which they said they were kind of doing. They were going to do it for War of the Spark, sort of like how they did with the Sagas. They wanted to see how they played. Because obviously this set was already done by the time War of the Spark was finished. So I'm willing to bet that in the next year or so, we'll see the occasional Planeswalker with a fourth static ability floating around. And I think it's going to be a thing that sticks around.
Right.
Of the new Planeswalkers in the set, I would say of the Mythics anyway, because there's the uncommon and the rare one, like you said. The best one is probably Chandra.
Her Mythic?
For Mythic. Because her...
Yeah, I love the emblem at the start.
Emblem has a plus ability.
I know, it's fucking ridiculous.
I mean, come on. And her even her ultimate, her minus X, is usable right away. She can't be countered. So she's going to do damage to stuff.
She's a six drop, but
she's a
six
drop, but that's
now.
One of those I win the game planeswalkers. It's like, you deal with me right now or you lose.
Honestly, if you put her in, I think people are like, oh, she'll probably be in mono red. I'm like, no. Honestly, where I look at her, where she'd fit for me, I would want her in my Gruul deck.
Well,
to
here's
get the
ramp.
I mean, turn one, think about it. Turn one, you put out the elf. Turn two, you put out the druid. All right, so turn three now, you're bringing her out. Like, life is insane.
Mm-hmm. There's a few different ways you can go with this now, because, for one, she could fit into a mono-red deck, but it wouldn't be mono-red aggro, it would be mono-red prison.
Right.
And also, two, you could fit her into any other deck that can play red, because, or especially like a red and white deck, or even red-blue, because of the combination of the new land Lotus Field and a couple of the other cards that interact with Lotus Field, plus a card from Arrivals of Ixalan. So here's the thing. Here's Lotus Field. It's a land. It's a rare land. Has hexproof, which is great for a land, so they can't blow it up.
Oh, yeah.
It enters the battlefield tapped. When it enters the battlefield, sacrifice two lands, and it taps to add three mana of any color. So it's a black Lotus on a stick.
Basically. Yeah, so, I mean, it's Lotus Field is probably... That's going to... I mean, Lotus Field is going to make Blood... What is it? Blood Sun?
Blood Sun. That's one of the cards that combos with this card. So Blood Sun is an enchantment from Rivals of Ixalan. Two and a red. And when it enters the battlefield, you draw a card, and it says... All lands lose all abilities that aren't mana abilities. So what
Which
that means,
means
what that means with
sack.
Lotus Field is that when you play it, not only do you not have to sacrifice two lands, it also comes in untapped.
Right.
So there's that combination, but there's two cards in M20 that combine with Lotus Field to make you avoid having to sacrifice the lands.
Okay, what are those?
The first one is Brought Back.
Yep.
It's an instant for two white. It says, choose up to two target permanent cards in your graveyard that were put there from the battlefield this turn. Return them to the battlefield tapped.
Yep.
So you pop, you tap your two planes for mana, plop down your Lotus Veil, sack your lands, play Brought Back, your lands are back. You have five mana on turn three.
Right.
Well, turn four. I mean, you play your third, fourth land, you have six mana on turn four.
Exactly.
And the other one, if I could find it real quick, it is rare, I believe. It's one of the newer ones that was... previewed. It might not be on Scryfall. Here it is. Tail's End. It's an instant for one and a blue.
That card's ridiculous.
Counter target activated ability, triggered ability, or legendary spell. So you put the sacrifice ability on the stack, counter it.
It's disallow. Only, you know, it nails legendaries.
Yeah, it's stifle that can counter planeswalkers.
Oh, it's so freaking beautiful. And that's just it. I look at this set and it's like, by the way, Crucible of Worlds would also help you with that, by the way.
Crucible would help
with
that.
Put them
for
in
a few
my...
months.
Huh?
For a few months until it rotates out.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but it's definitely one of those things. Like, I'm looking at this set, and I just cannot for the life of me figure out what the... I mean, they're insane.
They're having fun with this set.
They really are.
Did you see Colossus Hammer?
Are you kidding? Yes, I did.
Oh my God, that card's hilarious. It's an equipment for one colorless mana. Has equip 8.
Yeah.
Why does it have equip 8, you asked? Because equipped creature gets +10/+10 and loses flying. It's awesome.
I mean, that's just stupid. I mean, hold on a second. Let me go back to this. Is Lotus, is that a legendary land?
It
oh my
not
God.
Legendary.
Lotus Field's not even legendary.
Not
Holy
legendary.
Shit.
Well, remember, Lotus Veil wasn't legendary either.
No, it wasn't. You're right.
Oh.
But you put Growth Spiral. Oh my God. You put Growth Spiral on this.
You got to be careful with that, but yeah, absolutely. But I mean, and, you know, it's just they're doing these things with some of these cards. Rotting Regisaur.
Rotting Regisaur is ridiculous. It's the two black and a colorless. It's
two colorless and a black.
And it comes in at the beginning of your upkeep. Discard a card.
Yeah.
So it's a 3 mana cost for a 7/6.
Yeah, and that drawback ain't a drawback.
No, it's not at all, because it's during your upkeep. If it was after your draw step, discard a card, you'd be
like,
well,
but it's not even that. It's not even that. If you don't have any cards in your hand, there's no penalty.
None.
It's just a big fatty for 3 mana.
It's really becoming, like, clear to me. I mean...
And it's splashable.
It's really... That's just it. A lot of this set seems to be kind of sideboard fodder. Would be my way to put it. Like, a lot of these, you're not going to put, you know, the zombie dinosaur, you're probably not going to put that in your main deck.
Well, I mean, mono black aggro?
Maybe.
I would play that in mono black aggro main. 3 mana 7/6? Where do I sign?
I guess. I mean, the ley lines, you might put the ley lines in main.
That depends on your deck, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, it depends. Leyline of the Void, you're almost always safe putting that in your main in this standard.
Yeah.
Because the graveyard is now... the graveyard is another hand for most decks that are top tier of standard.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the graveyard's actually just kind of like the waiting room. Like, oh, no, I'm going to hang out here. We're good. We'll be right back. You know, it blows my mind how much of this is just, I mean, and the other thing I really noticed was a lot of tribal. Like, I have a strange sneaking suspicion that the new set is going to be tribal.
Yes, again. they have some definite tribalisms. And, I mean, elementals is a big thing in this deck.
Vamps are a big thing. I mean, because Sorin. Yep. Sorin's ridiculous for vampires. I mean, Sorin is a black and two colorless. Planeswalker, legendary, mythic, and plus one, target creature you control gains death touch and lifelink until end of turn. If it's a vampire, put a 1/1 counter on it. Plus, its other plus one is you may sacrifice a vampire. When you do, Sorin Imperious Bloodlust deals 3 damage to any target, and you gain 3 life. Its negative 3 is you may put a vampire creature card from your hand onto the battlefield.
Yeah.
I can't help thinking that I'm looking at some of these, and it just appears that they're going to... I think the next place they're going to go, because they're losing Ixalan, and because they're losing so much tribal, they're losing merfolk, vampires, really, dinosaurs,
pirates.
I mean, those are, I mean, but, I mean, look at this. A lot of elementals are in this set. A lot of spirits are in this set. Mm-hmm. Some angels. You know, a little human.
A lot of demons.
A lot of demons. And a lot of goblins. Like, we almost have all the goblins back. Mm. I mean, it just, it appears to me that where we're moving towards is that they're kind of hoping that with the new set, that's going to shift back to tribal again for a little while, because meta was tribal for a while.
Little bit, yeah.
For Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan, I mean, yeah, you still had, you know, RDW, but I mean, Merfolk was a thing, and there were a few decks running around that were tier 1.5, maybe 2. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Dominaria hit, and everybody's like, screw that, let's do legendary mm-hmm. time, you know, and everything went, you know, right off the map. Now it's Planeswalkers.
Yeah, and you saw there's also a new 2-card infinite combo.
I did not see that.
Marauding Raptor, okay. Polyraptor.
Oh, yeah, that's stupid.
So Marauding Raptor is a 2/3 for 1 and a red. That's not bad. 2/3 for 2. Nope. Creature spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. Sure, that's great. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Marauding Raptor deals 2 damage to it. If a dinosaur is dealt damage this way, Marauding Raptor gets +2/+0 to the end of turn. You cast yourself a Polyraptor, you got yourself infinite Polyraptors.
Yep. Here comes trouble. And you don't even have to use the Forerunner, the whatever it was there, that basically used to do the same thing for you.
You could, I mean, because it, you know, it still costs 7 at that point, but...
Well, and it what's nice is it only does the damage to the thing coming in. It's not like it hits everybody. So that's where the infinite comes in, is that it used to be, you know, Forerunner of the... I forget what it was, but...
Forerunner of the Empire.
Yeah, Forerunner of the Empire would do damage to everything if you wanted it to. So you couldn't not hit it. And, you know, to create the Polyraptors. This is like, no, I'm going to hit the Polyraptor. Just the Polyraptor. Then I'm going to hit that one. Then we'll hit that one. Then we'll hit that one. And then basically all of computers on Arena basically fail.
I can't wait until somebody does that. I want to see the first Twitch clip of somebody crashing Arena, casting a Polyraptor with that thing in play. Because I think it gets to a certain point, and then it just says, nope, sorry, shut down.
Well, it's got to basically, I mean, I think what they'll have to do is be like, how many times do you want to do this? You know, it's like, they should. If not, they absolutely should. It should be, you know, how many times are you going to do this? Well, let's do it 20. Okay, here's 20. Well, the problem what you do in paper.
The problem is, though, is there's no way to stop this loop. With those ones, with the ones you're talking about, you can, like the Infinite Nexus of Fates, you can choose to stop the loop. You can't stop this loop. It is infinite by nature because it's a mandatory trigger. So every time you cast a Polyraptor, it automatically deals a 2 damage to it, which makes a copy of Polyraptor, which it has to deal 2 damage to, and repeat, and then just crash.
I think Polyraptor is a may.
No, it automatically makes the token. Whenever it's dealt damage, you make a copy of it.
So how the hell is that going to work?
It'll crash the game.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it crashes the game. It's a draw. Unless you have some way to interrupt the loop with something else, like you sacrifice the Marauding Raptor,
right,
or you sacrifice a Polyraptor in response to the trigger, then you're going to get infinite Polyraptors. Now, obviously, infinite isn't a number in Magic, so yeah, like you said, you do have to pick an arbitrary number, but what happens is that you go that far, and if you don't have anything else to do, the game's a draw.
Oh, it won't let you go to attack mode?
Because it keeps going. You can't pass prior. You can't pass through the rest of your phase because this ability keeps going on the stack, having to resolve constantly.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's. So it's, I mean, not unintended that consequence, maybe. Yeah. But I mean, it's red. I'm sure there's a way you could be like, you know what? I'm just going to lightning strike my raptor at this point. I've got 15.3 quadrillion polyraptors. By the way, I have Rhythm of the Wild, so they have Riot, so they all have haste. Take a ton of damage.
Yeah, that's actually, wow, that is a bet. Yeah, because somebody's going to do that on a Friday.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because the biggest thing holding this back is the fact that Polyraptor's an 8-mana card.
Right.
You know?
Well, but in this meta, that's not a big deal anymore.
Yeah, no. There's plenty of ways to cheat that out.
This
set is just, for a core set, this set is bonkers. And it feels like we've been saying that about the last few sets. This set is bonkers. And it's just, well,
it seems like they're stepping. I mean, we could talk about this. I mean, we can move from spoilers a little bit because we've kind of gone over. Here's the thing, guys. Spoilers have been out for 2 weeks.
Yeah, you should have seen all these cards by now.
Right. I mean, so, and I don't want to tread ground that other podcasts have, but I do want to talk a few things. I mean, like, again, I keep coming back to this. And again, it was, I mean, you know, give credit where credit's due. MTG Goldfish said this on their cast, and I mean, I couldn't agree with it more. The complexity level of this set does not lend itself to core.
No, and they gave Commander a lot of love, too.
Oh, boy, did they. It's just, but when you talk about the mechanics involved, like you know, the Raptor you just talked about, or, you know, any number of, you know, scheming symmetry. You know, choose two target players. Each of them searches their library for a card, then shuffles their library and puts that card on top of it. And then, you know, there are wholly great things that you can do with that as far as, you know, if you have Ashiok out, great. Yes, you put that on top. Thank you. Now put it in your graveyard and exile it. You know, it's just a whole lot of various incredibly intricate type of things that are going on with this set.
I think what they finally realized is that just because it's a core set that's geared to new players, those new players aren't idiots. Most of them know what they're getting into when they start playing Magic. They know it's a complex game. That's what's drawing them to it. So you could take the training wheels off a little bit.
I don't disagree with that. But I just, and you, I mean, I look at this and go, this does not feel like a core. This feels like, you know, like what they should do in the fall.
This feels like a weak regular set. It's not as strong as War of the Spark.
True, but I mean, nothing's as strong as War of the Spark. I would dare say that in terms of power, War of the Spark is the most powerful we've seen in 15 years.
It's crazy, yeah. And I mean, it's probably the, like, I don't know, like, Kaladesh was crazy in a different respect, because that set was
literally that energy mechanic
broken.
It was broken. Yeah.
War of the Spark was, they made some mistakes, Teferi and Narset.
I don't consider them mistakes, but go on.
For their mana cost, they're mistakes.
Not at all.
They shouldn't cost three.
I think three is okay.
Another combat for another day.
Yes.
But this set, it definitely takes a step back from that, which I'm glad it was, because I was totally expecting the core set to be a palate cleanser before the fall set, which they still haven't announced the name, but I guess they will be doing that in a couple of weeks.
Probably during, you know, pre-release.
There's some event coming up where Morrow is going to be revealing the set. I forget what he said it was, but it's coming soon. We're going to know what the name of it is, what plane it's on. I imagine it's going to be... a lot of people are saying Kaldheim, I think, is what they're saying.
Really?
The Norse-themed one.
Right.
And then they think after that we're going to go to Theros.
Well, a lot of people are now wondering if we're not going to go someplace that has vampires. Vampire love. Yeah.
There's a lot of chatter for Innistrad. There's a lot of chatter for Theros. They obviously know this next set's going to be a new world because they've already said that. But basically going back to my point is that we knew that this set was going to be a bit of a palate cleanser. It was going to be a little less powerful. It's already gone beyond what my expectations of the power level were going to be. This is already a very strong set. I'm frankly shocked, which they haven't revealed yet, but it's coming, I'm sure, that the set has the power level that it does. It's just, there are a lot of constructed playable cards in this set. I'm very happy about that. There's going to be maybe some new deck archetypes that come out of this, new sideboard strategies. you know, existing decks are going to get a lot of new toys. I'm already eyeing a few for Esper control.
Dude, Esper's dead. Nope. You have to come to grips with this. Esper is, I mean, look at this set, for God's sake. They put a card in there that basically says, screw you, Esper. I mean, at the bottom of it, the fry mechanic is basically screw you, Esper. You know, it's like, and then the one that they put in here, there's one also for Grixis. It's kind of like they're like, screw off. We're tired of you guys playing three color. Go back to freaking tribal. Thank you.
No, Esper's not going anywhere.
Oh, you may play it, but I don't think it's going to be competitive for a while.
It's the number one deck played in the format right now is Esper.
Yeah, but if you take a look at this weekend, it didn't win. It hasn't won in a while. It hasn't won a big championship in a while. People are playing.
Esper Hero was second and fourth.
Second and fourth. Right. Didn't win.
And there were three other Esper decks in the top eight.
Yeah. Didn't win.
Yeah, but still, I mean, only one deck can win a tournament at any given time, but in the top eight, there were six or five Esper decks in the top eight.
I'm telling you, Esper's not that big. Because, I mean, you've been playing it. You've been playing it and getting just rolled.
No, I went 3-1 last week.
Oh, that's right. You did go 3-1. But, I mean, you know.
They've had to change their game plan for sure. The deck is a lot different than it was a month ago.
Right.
But Esper has adapted. It's not. It's the Borg. It's not going anywhere.
Well, do you know what I'm seeing come up? Actually, too. And I actually can say this because I'm seeing it on Arena. Mono Blue. It's coming out of the freaking woodwork again.
A little bit. There was a couple of mono blue players last week. There were a couple of mono blues last week.
It's like that damn deck will not leave.
I'm not upset about that. I like that. I'm glad that it's still there. I like mono blue.
I hate mono blue. I even played mono blue, and I hate mono blue.
I think we should probably move on because this is getting into a combat-y thing.
All right. What's that? So
I'm thinking that we should move into combat because I can already tell you one card that I know is going to be probably played at least between two and four copies in every Esper control deck going forward.
All right, let's.
Combat phase.
Basically, Esper's dead. Moving on.
No.
just kidding.
Esper is dead. Long live Esper.
Esper. Well, go ahead, sir. Our combat today is basically what do we think is going to make the biggest impact for Core 2020?
Well, I'm going to go on a little bit of a limb here. It's not going to be a mythic, and it's not going to be a rare.
Sure.
It will be an uncommon.
Okay.
It's an enchantment that's actually a reprint.
Yep.
Rule of Law.
Okay.
2 and 1 white. Each player can't cast more than one spell each turn.
Right.
I think Esper decks will start to play that because it shuts off Experimental Frenzy. It shuts off Simic Nexus. It shuts off half of those spells that go crazy casting a bunch of stuff a turn.
Right.
It shuts off Dreadhorde because all they can cast is Dreadhorde and you have Dovin's Veto to counter that and then they're done.
Right. But Dreadhorde doesn't cast the cards that are coming back in. Does it?
Well, I mean, they have to cast them eventually, and they can only cast one. So if they cast Tamiyo, that's all they can cast.
Right, but Command the Dreadhorde doesn't cast them; it just puts them back out, and you pay the
mana cost. But you have to cast Command the Dreadhorde, and it has to survive through counter magic.
Right.
Which, with Esper running this and Teferi 3 mana, they'll instant speed thought erasure the Command the Dreadhorde right out of your hand after your draw step. And you can't respond to it, and you can't cast another. You can only cast the one spell in the turn, which, even if it was a card draw spell, you can't cast the card you drew.
Well, I might keep. Here's the thing, I think the Leyline of Sanctity will go mainline in Dreadhorde, because Hexproof is. Go ahead, yeah. Take a look at my hand. You can't. Oh wait, you can't.
Well, I mean, like, Leyline of Sanctity
shuts it off, and the London Mulligan's going to let me shut it off.
Yeah, but all they do is play Teferi, bounce it, and then Thought Erasure you.
True. But that would be... Then they're not doing that till turn 5.
3.
How are they doing that turn 3?
Turn 3 Teferi.
Turn 3 Teferi. Oh, and turn 4 then they'll Thought Erasure me.
No. Yeah, turn 3 Teferi, then turn 4 they Thought Erasure.
Right. Okay. Well, I can give you that, but still... It's a very, very... You know, usually, though, with Thought Erasure, you kind of want to get it... You know, get it while the getting's good. I look at this and I don't think that Esper control is going to be, I mean, Esper will always be there.
I don't think it's going to be a full control. I will concede that. I don't think it's going to be a full control because
you think it's going to stay with the heroes?
Not necessarily heroes. It's going to be more of a tempo deck, I think.
Interesting idea.
Because you can't play counter magic really anymore.
Everybody's
playing Teferi 3 mana, which shuts off counter magic.
True. True, but unless you counter Teferi coming in.
Yeah, but you have to have the Dovin's Veto on turn 2. And you have to hope that they didn't Thought Erasure it out of your hand on turn 2.
Right, or Negate.
Nobody plays Negate anymore.
Well, they might now. I don't know.
There's no reason to, because Dovin's Veto can't be countered.
True. You know, it's definitely, I don't know, for me, I think the biggest hits on this set are going to be the 4 ley lines, or the 5 ley lines. I mean, Sanctity and Void are no-brainers. Void shuts, I mean, Izzet Phoenix will now be dead. If you're playing a black deck, Izzet Phoenix is a dead deck to you.
Yeah, between Leyline of the Void and Rule of Law, I don't think Izzet Phoenix is going to be around for very much longer.
No, I would have to agree with that. And I mean, that's just it. Okay, now if you're going to tell me Rule of Law and Leyline of the Void, now you're shutting off. Now Leyline of the Void will shut off Dreadhorde.
Which, surprise, they're both in Esper colors.
Yes, they are. but however, again, I'm not sure how Esper does against, until Mono Red rotates. Unfortunately,
Mono Red's a good matchup for Esper. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
All the incidental life gain?
Unless you put Tybalt out.
But then also too, again, if you're playing Esper colors, Leyline of Sanctity, go ahead, point that burn at me. Oh wait, you can't.
True. You're not wrong. I mean,
I could see Esper playing two ley lines in their sideboard, depending on the matchup. They could have Void and Sanctity in their sideboard.
Well, I think they should have Void, Sanctity, and where is it? Leyline of Anticipation. I mean, are you kidding me?
There's no need for Anticipation because you already have that ability with Teferi.
But you could have it on turn one.
You could, but I mean that would require either a great opening hand or really skillful mulligans.
But with
not having to rely on the mulligans.
With the London Mulligan, if you put 4 ley lines of anticipations into your deck, okay, you have a 4 in 60 chance of grabbing it.
Yeah, but then if you don't do it and then you draw it on turn 2, it's a 4 mana dead card.
But you're almost always, I mean, that's just it. The way the London Mulligan is kind of designed, you know, that I think that's why they're putting these in here, is they're like, go ahead, have at it. You know, here you go.
Because for me,
the ley lines are the reason to London Mulligan. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, if I could come out with a ley line of, if I'm playing Esper, to come out with a ley line of anticipation, turn one. So you keep ley line of anticipation, you keep Thought Erasure, you keep 2 mana. Even if you go to 5, you keep 2 mana, you've got, you know, and then say Teferi, you've got a good shot because you can scry on Thought Erasure on turn 2. You know, after their draw step.
I can kind of see your point. The only thing is that the problem with Leyline of Anticipation in the Esper decks is that they basically play at instant speed already for a lot of their stuff.
Sure.
Most of their removal is instant speed. And the stuff that you would want to flash in doesn't really help you too much because if you can't, I mean, flashing into a 3-mana Teferi, okay, you could flash it in during somebody's upkeep and put them on sorcery speed for the turn, but you can't use the loyalty abilities, you know what I mean? And then you're better off just casting the regular Teferi and plussing him to cast your sorceries at flash speed.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, though. I mean, to be able to cast creatures, too, at flash speed.
Yeah, but I mean, even now, even the Esper decks that are quote unquote control now starting to finally play some creatures in the main, but it's really only a couple of Bellhaunt, you know, Basilica Bellhaunts.
Which I still kind of wonder why they're not playing Thief of Sanity.
Because it dies to everything.
It does.
It ties to everything, and people are hip to it now. When they first started sideboarding it in for a while, it was like, you know, this card's impossible, and it's, you know, if you can get one to stick, they're still crazy. They're still awesome, and they'll win you the game every time. But people are holding back their removal now, waiting for the thief. So when you play something like a Bellhaunt, well, it's a 3/4. It survives shock. It survives lightning strike. They have to use a lava coil or some other larger removal spell to get rid of it.
Right.
It avoids Tyrant's Scorn, too. You have to use a D-Spark And would you rather despark a Bellhaunt or a Teferi 5 mana?
Right. I'm not saying you're necessarily wrong. I just don't think Esper... I think there's going to be too much that goes against it. There's so much hate for it. Again, Fry. A lot of Chandra stuff.
No, there'll definitely be hate for it, but I don't think it's strong enough to take out Esper completely, because you're only going to have a few copies. Like, you, even if you bring in four Fries...
Right.
You know, Esper plays a dozen Planeswalkers. You're not going to be able to kill them all with Fry. You're going to be real careful about picking your targets.
True. But there's other things like, you know... I'm just looking through here. You know, obviously the Leyline of Combustion. Because I'm looking mainly at red. Red and white are kind of... You know, red and especially green. Holy shoot. I don't know. I don't know that Esper's going to have the tools it's going to need to kind of take it over the hump. Too many other decks can go against it. I don't know. It's, you know, hey, we're spitballing here.
Mm-hmm. I am glad that they brought back the color hate for sideboards.
Yes.
Because sometimes you just need to get rid of a green card.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just need to Aether Gust their Vivian to the bottom of their library. Just because that's where it belongs. It'll be interesting to see, but I honestly don't think that even with all the new hate coming in, I don't see Esper going away. I mean, if Mono Red can survive all the hate that it's seen, Esper should be fine. At least until rotation.
You're not wrong. And I mean, it's definitely gonna be an interesting meta.
This is also the last set before rotation, so there's no more new toys for those decks after this.
No, that's what I mean. And I mean, the big ones that are going to get hit after this is Mono Red is definitely going to take a hit.
It'll be fine. As much as I hate Mono Red, it'll be fine.
Well, not if they don't reprint Shock and Lightning Strike.
Those are staples. Those are common. Unless, like I said, unless they just, you know, they go a little crazy and reprint Lightning Bolt. Do it. Come on, Wizards.
Oh, I'd love to have them reprint Lightning Bolt, but I don't know that they ever would.
No, I don't think they ever would. I really don't think they would. As awesome as it would be, I mean, yeah.
It's a real, yeah.
That's a pipe dream. That's a dream I would love to have, being able to just dust off Lightning Bolt and be like, oh, you're back in Standard finally after, well, ever.
Yeah. I'm still surprised they're not doing something like a Braid. I mean, you know, I'd love to see a Braid come back.
Well, isn't there a modal spell that's sort of like a Braid in the set that they already spoiled? Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, they did. They kind of did.
Which one?
It's not as good. It's called Reckless Airstrike. It's a sorcery for a red.
Oh, okay.
And you either deal 3 damage to a creature with flying or destroy an artifact.
Yeah,
it's not as good.
A Braid was, you know, destroy target artifact or creature and or do 2 damage. Hurdle was destroy creature, right?
Which one?
A Braid was, or was the Braid just destroy the artifact?
It was destroy an artifact or 3 damage to any creature.
That's right.
But it was also an instant.
It's interesting to me, too, like, to look at the lands and to see what they chose this time. I mean, I guess we could, like, go into main two. I mean, because these will impact. You know, losing the check lands is the big
eventually
thing.
Eventually, yeah.
We'll lose the check lands in the fall, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so everybody's kind of talking about it. And what it looks like they're replacing them with is, like, a lot of tap lands. Blossoming Sands will be back, Bloodfell Cave, so the life gains will be back.
Yeah, the Scrylands are coming back.
And the Scrylands was going to be my second, yeah.
Yeah.
And it just is like, come on. You know, I really do. I want them to reprint the check lands.
I like the Scrylands. I think I'm obviously thinking that they're going to reprint the allied colored cycle in the fall if they're doing the enemy colored now.
Right, probably.
But these are nice. I mean, for the price of them coming into play tapped, as a control player, being able to scry for essentially free, I'll take that.
Yeah. I get that. I mean, after having the perfect mana base that we've had.
Yeah, it's been beautiful. This is as close to perfect as we're going to get without fetch lands.
Right. So, I mean, I think the lands are going to definitely take it. And, I mean, it does. This whole set seems like a sideboard set. It seems like it's designed for you to sideboard in cards to fill holes that you're missing in the decks that are already out there.
Mm, yeah.
And the ones that aren't are tribal. It just seems...
But it is, again, it is a core set.
Yeah.
So, you know, so, you can't... I don't think you can expect too many new archetypes to come out of a core set. But, I mean, it's definitely adding and not necessarily subtracting from it. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, Knight Tribal could possibly be a thing.
Knight Tribal's already a thing. So, yeah, I mean, it could come back. I mean, it definitely helps that. I think that for the 3 months, I got to be honest with you, I'm tempted to build a vampire deck.
Mm-hmm. What about an elemental deck?
Elemental's a big thing, too. What's their colors? It's like it's Grixis.
green and red
and blue
and
black. Is it 5-color elemental?
Well, there's a mythic for in each color for elementals, but it looks mostly red and green and blue. It looks like it's Teemer.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's Teemer because they're
and Chandra deals with a lot of elementals.
Their mythic, their wedge mythic is Teemer colors.
Yeah.
Where is he? Where the heck did he go? His name is Omnath, Locus of the Royal.
Right.
3/3 for 1, a green, a red, and a blue. When he enters the battlefield, deals damage to any target equal to the number of elementals you control. And whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on target elemental you control. If you control 8 or more lands, draw a card.
Right. It seems like Goblin's another big one. I mean, oh my god. If you look through red, goblin. I mean, there's like 7 goblins. We already have Goblin, War Boss, and Chain Whirler, and the whole 9 yards. So, mm-hmm. I look at vampires, and I'm just like, because vampires were already good. They were just missing 1 or 2 like killers.
Yeah.
And you know what's the one there? The one that basically, there's a few, but the one that does damage every time a vampire attacks.
Sanctum Seeker.
Sanctum Seeker. Yeah. I mean, yeah, this might be a thing. I might build a vampire deck just for kicks on a Friday night, just to be like, hey, what's up?
But yeah, long story short, for combat, yeah. We both win because yeah, this is a good set.
It's a very good set. I highly recommend it. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to afford to buy a box, which sucks. But that being said.
Main phase.
Okay, so second main phase. We're gonna kind of shift gears from core 20.
Wait. What? Before we do, I'm sorry. Did you see the new legendary dragon?
I did see the legendary dragon. His name is Pete's Dragon, isn't it?
No.
Oh.
Dracuseth, Maw of Flames.
Oh yeah. He's stupid.
Wow. 7/7 flying. Legendary dragon. 4/3 red, not splashable at all.
Not even close.
I'm surprised they put this ability on him, to be honest.
Yeah.
Whenever Dracuseth Maw of Flames attacks, it deals 4 damage to any target and 3 damage to each of up to 2 other targets. So
it's
he deals
Glorybringer. It's Glorybringer on crack.
10 damage, and he's still a 7/7 flyer.
Yeah. Oh yeah!
Yuck.
Yep.
I'm done. That's just. It's one of those cards where you're like, especially in limited, that's about the biggest bomb you could hope for.
Actually, he would for me replace in my because my Gruul deck. I'm running 2 Ilharg's because it's spicy and fun, and I have Galta in there strictly as a. Ilharg attacks, and so does Galta for 12. Haha. Oh, wait, 13, because I'll also throw the Rhythm of the Wild out there, so be like, fuck you, here you go. And, yeah, I would probably replace him with that.
That wouldn't work.
Why wouldn't he work?
When Ilharg attacks and puts the creature into play attacking, you've gone past the point where attackers are declared, and that's where that ability would be checked.
Eh. So, okay, so I don't get
But you still have a 7/7 flyer.
Yeah, I'd still have a 7/7 flyer.
Still have a 7/7 flyer. There's nothing wrong with that. But, if it worked like that, oh, my God, that'd be awesome. But, yeah, unfortunately, that's not how it works.
I got screwed on it the other day because Chris, our guy at work, he bolt-bended Ilharg. I was like, you fuck. Yes, so. All right, so now we're out of core 2020. Really, we're out. Maramus, are you okay with that now?
Fine.
Do you need a hug?
No.
Good.
Yes.
All right, I'll be right over. But we're going to go ahead and kind of switch gears. We're going to talk about the Mythic Championship 3 that was over the weekend. I did not get a chance to watch much of this. I'm not going to lie. What about you? Did you get a chance to kind of peep any of this?
Life kind of got in the way. But I was able to see a little bit of the semis between, I think it was Brad Nelson and Kai Bude.
Right. That was actually pretty good.
Hey, guess what? It was Esper on Esper.
Yes. Well, I actually like the final match, especially the second to last turn.
Oh, the Simic at this, the Nexus of Fate off the top?
Off the opt.
It was a $50,000 opt. Yeah, but it was off the opt, which was off the Escanta, which was off the Escanta.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I mean, it was obviously that was kind of fun to watch because I mean, dead horse time. But I mean, and it won him the game. Mm-hmm. But you know, yeah. I heard
the coverage on that was very, very good. I wish I'd been able to watch more of it.
It was good, and that's the problem I have with, you know, why can't this be that good for paper Pro Tours? Why do we have to wait until an arena? Mm-hmm. You know, it brings up the question of, okay, Wizards, you know, are you really, you know, people sit there and all the time you got the, you know, the aluminum foil hat people that are sitting there and they're like, you know, they're going to do away with paper. They really want to just deal with arena because it's cheaper, man. They're going to do away with paper. And you're like, no, of course they're not going to do away with paper. It's hard to argue. When they're you know, Mythic Championship looks this good with this type of coverage, mm-hmm. and their paper Mythic Championship looks like the old, you know, Grand Prix,
right?
You know, it just something's missing, you know, and there's a disconnect there.
Yeah, but
I definitely enjoyed watching it. I mean, it's a little hard to get around the whole, you know. You're bringing these guys in, and they're sitting there at a computer. They're still not talking to each other. Granted, they don't talk to each other during the game, but because they have microphones, like, I kind of, you know, you've mic'd them up. They have headset mics. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love to hear, you know, sorry about this, brother. Here we come. You know, like,
a little bit
tell
of
people
yeah.
tell people that there's going to be a little bit of, you know. Viewer discretion is advised, because I'm sure some of these people are like, F off, and I'm gonna, you know, you freaking dillweed and all that stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's just, I would love to see more of that. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's interesting. What did you think?
Well, there were a couple of things that, from what I was able to catch afterwards, that I guess were kind of big deals that happened. There's a glaring error, not error, but something on Arena that they need to fix, especially for tournaments like this. And I don't know if this has happened to you. I know it's happened to me, where someone casts, what is it called? The Legion War Boss.
Okay.
And you have a removal spell in your hand that you can cast.
Right.
But it goes to their beginning of combat step before you have a chance to cast it, putting their trigger on the stack to make a token.
True.
If you were able to, you know, unless you have the chance to set a stop at the end of their main phase, you don't have a chance to kill their goblin before he makes another one.
Right.
This actually came up in the tournament where I guess they were supposed to announce to the other player, hey, I'm casting Legion War Boss, you might want to set your stop on the end of your main phase. So they had to, you know, stop the game, try to figure out if there was a way that they could go back. And meanwhile, the guy's timer's running out, so he's getting roped. And it's just, I don't understand how they couldn't code it into the game where you have an option to, okay, you have a response. Do you want to play it? You know what I mean? If it automatically moves into the next phase, you've missed an opportunity to get some tempo.
True.
And it could be a big deal because that one goblin, that could be the difference in the game, especially if they're playing red.
Totally.
So I'm hoping that, you know, they take this as a lesson. I think they obviously took some lessons from the Invitational and applied it to the coverage this time around. So it seemed like it was better from what I've heard. The viewership was still very high. I think there was one match that got over 120,000 viewers. The other thing that happened, and I don't remember what the name of the player was, but he actually had a seizure on camera.
Oh, my.
I don't know if it was the stress of the moment or the lights or something that was going on, but he actually had a seizure on camera. Luckily, he was okay. They had people there ready to help if he needed it, but it just goes to show that, yes, this is a game people are playing, but the stress is extremely high. So I would, you know, whether or not they earned their spot there, in your opinion, they're there. The stress is there for them. You know, just try to be mindful of that, I guess. You know, if there's a player that you don't like, because they might be going through some other stuff, and it could show up on camera. You never know.
Totally. And there's no cause for that anyway. I mean, I actually had this conversation with one of the kids today, because, I mean, we were playing in lunch, and basically, I played something, and, oh, I had Phoenix out, and I had the Elemental out, because it got, you know, I got killed. And basically what happened was is that Chris was going to go at and take out the you know, token, and then somebody else decided to negate it, and basically he got salty, and the other kid got salty, and it's like, guys, this is a game. Like, never forget that. This is not worth getting pissed over. Like, yeah.
And it's not like there's $50,000 on the line at that setting. I mean, for the Mythic Championship, it's a totally different vibe.
Totally.
And I feel really bad for that player. I'm glad he's okay. I don't remember what his name is. I'd have to look it up. But I guess, you know, if you're going to go into a tournament, stay hydrated. Try to keep yourself cool. I mean, meditate between matches. Find a way to step away in between rounds to recharge.
Totally.
You know, have a snack. Bring food with you if you can. If you have, you know, a seizure issue, maybe let the head judge know, hey, this might happen to me during the tournament. Right. I'm sure people who have those conditions already do that. But it was scary. Unfortunately, the announcers at first thought she was just sort of messing around, but then afterwards they're like, oh, is he okay? And you could obviously tell that he was not okay. Like, his eyes rolled back into his head. Right. It was not cool. I mean, but luckily he actually was able to finish the match, and he was good for the rest of the tournament. It was like it was a one-time thing, but it's just, you know, it goes to show these are people, and they go through stuff.
Totally. And, I mean, we all have to kind of remember that. It's like, I guess the word is, don't be a dick.
Yeah. In all things.
Yeah. So it's definitely with that. I mean, I would like to see more. You know, I think the next MC is Barcelona. Do we know what the format is on that?
I think it's modern.
Of course, it's modern. Because why?
I think that one might be modern. I'd have to check on that. I could probably find that out pretty quickly.
You know, and that's, when is that? That's soon.
That's next month.
Yeah. So. But yeah, it definitely, I highly recommend, you know, checking it out. I think it's probably still available on Twitch. You know, it was definitely worth watching, and it's nice to see them kind of do something with it, but it frustrates you a little bit too, because you're like, you know, guys, you could do something pretty awesome here.
Barcelona's Mythic Championship is Modern and Modern Horizons Booster Draft.
Ooh. Interesting.
So that was a tournament I went to the Mythic Championship qualifier for.
Right. And you would have had to go to...
Wouldn't have been able to go.
You wouldn't have gone. Yeah.
Would not have gone. As much as I would have loved to, I am not able to go. I actually already have a prior commitment for that weekend. But, you know, if another MCQ comes around, I'll play in that one too. Maybe I'll do better than 4-4. Grumble, grumble.
Yeah, well, see how that is. But, you know, let's... So there's that. I mean, the Mythic Championship 3, it is available on Twitch. You guys should check it out. But with that, let's...
End stuff.
All right, we're going to start picking up our stuff here, putting the cards back in the box, getting our, you know, play mats put away. And with that, though, you know, let's go ahead and we're going to... start winding the show down for tonight. You know, you can find us online through a lot of various means. Both Aramis and I, me more than Aramis these days, Do try to stream Arena at least once or twice a week on the Planestalkers podcast channel on Twitch. Look up Planestalkers podcast. You can also follow me on Twitch at Mindcrime73.
I am on Twitch at RMACWRX. I have not been active on there in a while. I do have some stuff going on outside of the podcast that's really going to basically prevent me from being on Twitch pretty much at all, unless I happen to catch Will already streaming and I hop on. Hopefully, once all this is all said and done and this is taken care of, I might be able to have some more free time to start streaming again. So if you want to give me a follow on Twitch, that's great. I'm not going to have any new content coming out for a while, so I would say, you know, follow the podcast channel, follow Mindcrime73. You'll be able to get some more content that way. But if Twitter is more your speed, I do try to keep the Twitter account going as often as possible. And our show is at PlanestalkerPod on Twitter.
And my personal Twitter is at WR Benson. And of course, you can always follow us on Facebook. Just look up Planestalkers Podcast on Facebook. Like and follow our page. Of course, if you were watching tonight, odds are good you already found us. So we thank you for that.
Yes, thank you very much for that. Finally, you can send us emails. You guys haven't been sending us emails for the last couple
of
weeks.
Well, we have been kind of off, but
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, but still, I mean, doesn't mean they can't send us an email, guys.
Oh, I don't disagree. You know, come on, people. What's wrong with
you? Lonely. I don't have anybody to talk to.
Yeah, well,
but yeah,
it's not our fault.
Anyway,
make some friends, Jesus.
Sorry, but you can send us emails and even ask for advice in our Ask Aramis section, where I can offer you tips on anything from deck construction to limited choices. And the address for that is podcast@planestalkerspodcast.com.
And we would love to get some more reviews. We have two or three up on iTunes right now. If you have an iOS device, it would really help the show if you went and just left us a little review, preferably positive. About, you know, what you guys see there, what you think, how we're doing. Just go on to the iOS there and leave that for us. Or however, we are also on Google Store. We're also in Stitcher. We're also on, I think we're on a bunch of stuff, Spotify, you know, so tons of stuff
everywhere. So,
and this Miss Perez is actually saying you're the fairer Perez, the better Perez. The one who's going to buy my fiance, my future wife and I, a box of 2020 for our wedding, she is saying that this is way better than grocery shopping. So
she's not wrong there.
So with that, though, we are going to back this train out of here. You know, really, guys, we really enjoy doing this show. Like I said, we're going to try to keep this as regular as we can through the summer. But again, we have a bunch of weddings and stuff coming up, so... And so with that, we're going to go ahead and back ourselves out of here right now. We want to thank you guys for tuning in again, as always. So for Aramis Perez, this is Will Benson saying that remember to always leave some of your lands untapped because you'll never know when you'll need them. Have a great week. Have a great day. And we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.